Salam sejahtera anda bersama saya Rizal Zulkapli dan ini Niaga Awal. Kita mulakan dengan perkembangan terkini dalam negara. Jumlah pemberian vaksin terus catat peningkatan ke paras rekod melebihi 400,000 untuk hari kedua berturut-turut menurut lampiran yang dikongsikan Jabatan Akses Bekalan Vaksin JKJAV. Sebanyak 424,541 dos telah diberikan pada 13 Julai menjadikan ia tertinggi setakat ini. Daripada jumlah itu, 260,000 individu menerima dos pertama, manakala 164,000 lagi lengkap dos kedua. Semalam, dos sehari yang diberikan adalah sekitar 421,000 dos dan kami akan bawakan perkembangan tersebut dalam jam-jam akan datang. Dan seterusnya, pembicaraan kes rasuah bekas Ketua Menteri Pulau Pinang Lim Guan Eng membabitkan pembinaan terowong dasar laut dan projek pembinaan jalan utama pintu Pulau Pinang diteruskan di Mahkamah Seksyen Kuala Lumpur pada hari ini. Dan untuk melihat perkembangan tersebut, kita bersama dengan wartawan Astro Awani Hasimi Muhammad. Hasimi, teruskan dengan laporan.
Baik, terima kasih Rizal. Di studio hari ini, pembicaraan melibatkan kes Lim Guan Eng memasuki hari kedua di Mahkamah Seksyen Kuala Lumpur, di mana ketika ini kita masih lagi menunggu ketibaan bekas Ketua Menteri Pulau Pinang itu ke Kompleks Mahkamah Tinggi, Kompleks Mahkamah Kuala Lumpur yang kita jangkakan akan tiba pada bila-bila masa dari sekarang. Kerana diikutkan prosedur pembicaraan dijadualkan akan bermula pada 9.30 pagi hari ini dan bersambung semula di hadapan Hakim Mahkamah Seksyen Azura Alwi. Dan untuk hari ini kita menjangkakan juga beberapa lagi saksi pendakwaan akan dipanggil untuk memberikan keterangan dalam pembicaraan ini, di mana sepanjang proses pembicaraan ini seramai 125 saksi pendakwaan dijangka akan dipanggil oleh pihak pendakwaan, termasuk juga wakil daripada beberapa esko dari negeri Pulau Pinang. Dan setakat semalam, dua saksi pendakwaan telah pun selesai memberikan keterangan, di mana saksi pertama pendakwaan yang merupakan ahli perniagaan dan juga pelakon Datuk K. Gitanjali Gausila juga telah pun dilepaskan semalam setelah selesai memberikan keterangan dan juga sesi pertanyaan balas oleh peguang yang mewakili Guan Eng, iaitu Gobing Singgyo. Dan kalau kita dapat imbas sedikit apa yang telah dimaklumkan atau diberitahu kepada Mahkamah Seksyen semalam oleh saksi pertama, antaranya adalah mengenai saksi pertama pendakwaan itu tidak mengetahui perbincangan sulit antara suaminya dan juga Lim Guan Eng yang dimaklumkan telah hadir ke rumahnya di Petaling Jaya, Selangor sekitar 2 pagi pada Ogos 2017. Dan menurut Gitanjali, dia dimaklumkan mengenai kehadiran ahli Parlimen Bagang itu ke rumahnya oleh suaminya, Datuk Sri Ganaraja M. Kanasundram, ketika sedang tidur. Dan juga turut dimaklumkan pada Mahkamah Seksyen semalam, di mana Guan Eng hanya hadir sekali saja ke rumahnya, sementara individu yang dikenali sebagai Datuk Zarul telah pun hadir beberapa kali ke rumahnya atas urusan perniagaan bersama suaminya. Dan juga ketika pemeriksaan utama oleh Timbalan Pendakwa Raya Wan Syahrudin Wan Ladin, Gitanjali mengesahkan beberapa gambar yang diambil di rumahnya menggunakan telefon bimbit oleh individu yang dikenali sebagai Zaro. Sementara ketika sesi disoal balas oleh Peguang Gobing Singgyo yang mewakili Guan Eng, Gitanjali berkata dia sudah biasa bertemu dengan beberapa ahli politik dan ia bukan satu perkara yang luar biasa. Sementara juga selepas sesi keterangan selesai melibatkan saksi pertama, iaitu Gitanjali, saksi kedua yang turut dipanggil untuk berikan keterangan ialah pegawai penyiasat SPRN Sadun Abdul Samad. Dan kita masih lagi menantikan saksi ketiga hari ini, apa yang akan dimaklumkan, dan kita akan bawakan perkembangan tersebut langsung di Astro Awani dan astroawani.com. Rizal,
terima kasih Hasimi Muhammad dengan laporan tersebut. Teruskan bersama kami di astroawani.com dan juga di saluran 501 untuk perkembangan tersebut dan juga perkembangan lain di dalam negara. Saya ingin tambah sedikit kepada laporan berkenaan dengan vaksin tersebut. Kami ingin bawakan bahawa sehingga 13 Julai 2021, 12 juta dos vaksin telah diberikan dengan 25.6% populasi telah terima dos pertama. Ini bermakna sekitar 1/4 ataupun 1 daripada 4 individu di Malaysia ataupun populasi di Malaysia telah menerima dos pertama mereka, dan juga 11.8% telah lengkap dos kedua. Teruskan bersama kami untuk laporan tersebut. Seterusnya, harga rumah di Malaysia dijangka meningkat 3% dalam jangkaan ataupun dalam masa 12 bulan akan datang dan terus melonjak 12% bagi tempoh 12 bulan berikutnya. Didorong unjuran yang lebih baik menurut pengasas bersama dan juga ketua eksekutif kumpulan Kashif Ansari untuk GYIQI. Bagi pasaran sewa, walaupun dijangka tumbuh hanya 1% bagi 12 bulan akan datang, namun ia diunjurkan meningkat 8% selepas suku ketiga 2022. Tambah Kashif, unjuran bagi pasaran hartanah kediaman Malaysia semakin baik. Jelasnya, memandangkan Malaysia hampir pasti melaksanakan pembukaan semula ekonomi dan mengekang pandemik, ia menjangkakan aktiviti transaksi serta harga hartanah rumah meningkat tahun ini. Dan laporan tersebut dibawakan pada sekitar awal bulan Julai ini. Namun, untuk membincangkan berkenaan pasaran hartanah Malaysia pada ketika ini, menimbang segala maklumat semasa, kita bersama dengan pengasas bersama dan juga pengarah urusan kumpulan GYIQI, Daniel Ho. Daniel, thank you for joining us. Daniel, perhaps you can share with us the latest development in the property market in Malaysia following the COVID-19. How has COVID-19 changed the property market in Malaysia? Your CEO, Kashif, said that house prices in Malaysia is expected to climb 3% over the next 12 months and will continue to surge by 12% in the next or in the following 12 months on improved outlook. Will you change that looking at the current state of COVID-19 in Malaysia?
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me to Astro Avani. First of all, you know, talking about COVID-19, it has disrupted many lives. And it has changed the landscape of people in the business community, especially when you look at the airlines and hospitality. And when we are moving in our early years, last year, moving into COVID and undergoing lockdown, many of the buyers in property sectors, they expect the property market to tank and probably to crash to a certain extent, to mimic the sort of movement that is seeing in other industry that is deeply impacted by COVID. But I would want to reiterate and confirm that as of based on our observation in 2020 as well as in 2021, the property sector remains to be a very stable sector. Though in 2020 there is a slight correction of prices. There's a small dip of about 5% plus minus depending on the sector. But this year moving forward, prices has become firmer, prices is on the rise. And to a certain extent, you are seeing that in terms of prices movement, it is quite inflationary in regards to the macro environment. The other sectors, that the other change that we are seeing in terms of the trend for property would be the utilization of property have changed. In the past, residential property is solely used for living and people live it and this is their home. But now, more and more, you're seeing that a lot of people is incorporating work from home feature in their own home, in their residence. And people is setting aside additional space or looking for a bigger property to add on the work from home element. And in contrast to office sector, you are seeing as well, many companies is retaining their office size, but the occupancy of that office, the utilization in terms of staff occupancy have reduced due to adherence to SOP, as well as in terms of what you call companies is getting more and more looking at expanding their office because many companies still believe in having their employee work in an office environment. They try to follow the SOP, social distancing, and this is happening in the market right now.
And Daniel, you know, perhaps you can also share with us the trends that you've seen so far in terms of the prices and types of property. You mentioned about the commercial property. How have consumers changed? Do they now prefer, you know, for domestic use, bigger units?
That is exactly what is going on based on the transaction that we are seeing. In 2021 alone, the volume of transaction for both residential have doubled compared to last year. And in terms of commercial office space, it is well sustained. We are seeing that the commercial office space, we do not see a downsizing of office spaces when it comes to utilization. Instead, we are seeing inquiries coming from different companies in different sectors looking for bigger office space because they still believe and they still want their employee to work in an office environment. For whatever reasons, I think many companies still believe having their employee close to the rest of the team physically as well as the management is important for driving their business further. So this is the things that is ongoing. So commercial property prices wide is well sustained. I do not foresee a big spike in terms of demand and prices, but definitely in the sectors of residential is very exciting, as well as in industrial is very exciting, as we are seeing a lot of inquiry is moving towards the warehousing, the manufacturing sectors, as well as the logistics sectors.
Daniel, we have oversupply and unsold properties before the pandemic. How can the different stakeholders resolve this issue strategically post COVID-19?
The word oversupply and unsold unit, I would say it is a false illusion. And it implies, you know, generalized that the property sectors, there is a supply glut problem. But I would say when you talk about property market, it is an inefficient market in comparison to stock market. Say, for example, if a company in the stock market is overvalued, immediately the market, the stock exchange will pick it up and the market will reprice it. The price will go down and to reflect whatever true value that company is. Unlike property market, a lot of developers, when they proceeded to acquire a land, they do planning, they acquire the approval for the development, they go forward with construction and selling. Perhaps during the journey of doing the entire thing, there are mistakes made, meaning to say the developer is constructing or developing a project based on what they want, but might not necessarily be what the market wants. So when there is a mismatch, when the product is in construction, it's very difficult to go back and rectify or U-turn, basically, because everything is set. And most of the developers, they still have to continue on to, you know, go into the market and finish the product where the expectation is not met on the ground. This is where you see the problem arises, where buyers, they will gravitate towards other property that meets their requirement. Just give you an example. For example, if a developer is building a high-rise development in an area or a location where the markets once landed property, this is where you see a mismatch. Mm-hmm. Or another example that I can give, say, for example, in another industry, if, say, for example, Proton is manufacturing a one-seater car and producing 500,000 units every month and expect to sell that as a lifestyle product, probably by the end of this year, you will see that probably there is a glut supply of more than 5 million units of a vehicle unsold. So these are the factors that is impacting the development. And how the developer or stakeholder can rectify this matter is they should engage professional consultants to identify the problem. It could be the problem of the product, it could be a problem of place, pricing, it could be a problem of marketing. Identify that problem and work with the professionals to solve it, and so that the solution that is arrived at will meet the expectation of the market.
Mm-hmm. But what about businesses? I know you said earlier that there's a preference for businesses when it comes to looking for commercial spaces or commercial property. But these things are planned way 2 years at least or 3 years at least in advance, right? What happens to the property that were developed or planned 2 or 3 years ago, looking at the demand for it now? Because you can't move really fast and address things immediately, because it takes time to build these properties, right?
That's right. I think the first key item is developer got to understand and know what exactly the market wants. And developers on top of that would have to understand the underlying trends in the market, because people's lifestyle change, technology changes, and disruption happens every now and then. And because of that, I think it's very important for every single developer to be able to project forward and plan their development accordingly. And a lot of, unfortunately, I think many players that is in the business of development, not only confined to Malaysia, but regionally and globally, they does development based on what their gut feel is. There is a lack of understanding in terms of what the market is, a lack of understanding in the data acquisition to know the requirement. So these are basically a backlash. These are the things that eventually they will have to pay heavily for it. But for anyone who is planning moving forward towards and meeting their property requirement, it is important to go forward, be a forward-thinking approach. You know, this is the thing.
And Daniel, real estate has become a new global currency, that is according to your chief economist, Shan Syed. What's your advice to investors? Why must they invest in the Malaysian property market?
I think when you talk about investors, it's important they have to understand or know how big is their risk appetite, what sort of investors are we addressing to. There is no one solution for everything. Mm. Investors, there are certain investors who wanted high yield in a very short time. Property would definitely not fit them, but there are many other investors who wanted a long-term, well-sustained return. And on top of that, you know, preservation of wealth or probably safeguard against inflationary pressure. Malaysia is definitely one of the top choice. Because when you talk about Malaysia as a country, we are growing in terms of population, in terms of our future, our GDP. There's a lot of potential in this country. And Malaysia being right at the center of ASEAN is also, you know, part of the an enlarged trading bloc whereby you have more than 650 million people doing business all across this region. And it is a perfect hub. And many investors is certainly eyeing Malaysia as being one of the top spot.
But would this be the best time for them to invest in the Malaysian property market, looking at the state of things right now?
I would say in terms of timing, I would encourage you know, any investors to look into the macro economic factor. Say, for example, because of COVID, governments, countries have increased their money supply. And by means of them increasing their money supply, they are undertaking a lot more debt instrument. And that in itself is diluting whatever money that investors is holding in their bank. And you are also seeing many, what they call central bank, is aggressively adjusting their monetary policy to lower down their interest rate. For example, in Malaysia alone, because of COVID, the interest rate OPR have reduced from 3% to 1.75. So if any investors is holding on to cash in their bank, their returns from the interest is diminishing. So coupled with another external environment would be the inflationary pressure. When you look at commodity all around the world, edible oil, be it palm oil, soybean oil, rapeseed oil, it has hit record high. Palm oil CPO alone is more than 4,000 ringgit per ton right now. And you are seeing also crude oil barrel is almost at their peak. On top of that, other commodities like iron ore, who is, you know, important in steel making, is going up the roof, as well as copper. And all these commodities is driving inflationary pressure. So for any investors who is holding to who is holding on to cash or money, fiat currency, they are seeing that the devaluation of the dilution of their money in their banks. I think this is just about the best time to go in, taking into consideration last year there was a slight correction. And before more inflationary pressure seep into the property sector, I think this is the best time to go into property market.
But what are some of the headwinds do you foresee moving forward? Things are still volatile, COVID-19. What are some of the headwinds do you see moving forward? Sorry.
I would say one of the beautiful thing about property is it is a product that is a necessity to everyone. Like it or not, in spite of whatever challenges and headwinds, the demand is always there. And in many cases, when a country or a region is facing economic crisis, the demand is sort of like being postponed. So postponement of demand doesn't mean that the demand has depleted. Postponement of demand is building towards a period where when they see clarity in situation, there will be an influx of massive demands into property sectors, and that is going to drive the price even higher and faster. As we have evidently seen during the global financial crisis in 2008, where the world is being shocked by this, you know, a lot of bank, you know, even is unstable during the time. So a lot of buyers and investors withhold, delay their demand. So when they start to see clarity in the second half of 2009, you actually witness a sharp rise in Malaysia property and property across the world. I remember during the 2009 second half, Malaysia property increased by more than 10%, 2010 by more than 12%, and it has been increasing, you know, quite aggressively for that few years. And this is the same thing that I would anticipate happening when people start to see more clarity. So the smart money, those investors who is more astute during the risky period, they will place their bet. So I think this is something that for those who is able, I think this is a good time to really consider that.
On that note, thank you very much Daniel Ho, pengasas bersama dan juga pengarah urusan kumpulan jua IQM, bincangkan berkenaan dengan unjuran pasaran hartanah di Malaysia di tengah COVID-19 ini. Kita akan berehat seketika kembali selepas ini. Bertemu kembali dan ini perkembangan yang baru kami terima. KDNK Singapura tumbuh 14.3% pada suku kedua berbanding tempoh sama tahun lepas. Namun berbanding suku pertama, ia menguncup 2%. Sementara itu, saham di pasaran Asia dibuka bercampur susulan laporan kenaikan kadar inflasi di Amerika. Terdahulu, saham di pasaran Amerika ditutup rendah dengan indeks utama ditutup di bawah paras rekod yang dicatatkan pada Isnin. Indeks S&P 500 jatuh 0.4%, Dow Jones jatuh 0.3% dan Nasdaq jatuh 0.38%.
Pelabur menimbang laporan korporat suku kedua daripada syarikat besar di Amerika dan kerisauan berkenaan kadar inflasi di Amerika. Terkini, kadar inflasi pada Jun meningkat ke paras terpantas dalam 13 tahun dengan pemulihan ekonomi terus meningkat di Amerika. Dalam masa yang sama, permintaan pengguna terus mengukuh, meningkatkan harga kenderaan, tiket penerbangan dan barangan lain. Kadar inflasi pada Jun naik 5.4% berbanding tempoh sama tahun lepas tertinggi sejak Ogos 2008. Pelabur kini gusar dan cuba untuk melihat bagaimana The Fed akan respon kepada peningkatan kadar inflasi ini. Dalam masa yang sama, Goldman Sachs dan JP Morgan lapor keuntungan besar pada suku kedua dengan disokong perbankan pelaburan.
And it's complicating the question as far as, well, you know, how strong will, you know, these next few months be from the U.S. consumer and the U.S. economy, and also inflationary pressures. I think we're so fixated on, okay, the Fed has finally signaled that they're ready to start talking about tapering purchases. And once they do start to make that official and have the announcement that they're going to taper, then the countdown comes as far as when will interest rates rise. And right now, I think there's this lively debate as far as whether or not inflation is transitory or persistent. And what's been happening on Wall Street is you've seen the market go from cyclical rotation trade to growth stocks. And in that, that's really, you know, confused the move in the Dow Jones Industrial and also the S&P 500. And right now, you know, foreign investors, though, when you take a look at their situation, U.S. stocks still look very attractive. And that's why you still see any dip is immediately being bought. So that's why, you know, we're you know, it seems like we're making a fresh record high going up, you know, 0.1%, you know, on a regular basis. But it's been a very choppy market. And right now, I think you're going to probably see, until we have further clarity from the Fed and also as far as the global growth outlook, it's going to be probably a very choppy market.
Dan seterusnya, Ketua Pembangkang Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim mempersoalkan perbelanjaan hasil daripada peningkatan hutang kerajaan ketika tempoh pandemik ini. Beliau dakwa keadaan di hospital masih teruk, tambahan kaki tangan masih tidak seperti dijanjikan dan vaksinasi biarpun ada peningkatan sudah begitu lambat dan juga akibatkan jumlah yang menghidap COVID-19 lebih buruk.
Dalam kemas ini di YouTube dan platform media sosial lain pada 13 Julai yang bertajuk Situasi COVID dan Masalah Ekonomi Rakyat, Datuk Seri Anwar tekankan yang kedudukan kewangan negara ketika ini adalah lebih parah daripada satu dekad yang lalu. Menurutnya, hutang kerajaan kini telah mencecah RM1.2 trilion. Namun tegasnya, ini tidak menjadi masalah jika hasil daripada pinjaman tersebut disalurkan terus kepada rakyat.
Saya hanya tekankan soal hutang ini kerana hutang itu bertambah sampai triliun, tetapi kesan kepada rakyat dan penyanaan peningkatan kegiatan ekonomi masih tidak menentu. Umpamanya kita lihat umpamanya memo yang dikemukakan oleh industri kecil dan sederhana SME baru-baru ini. Mereka mengemukakan cadangan. Kerana kalau kita biarkan dia terus malam, ratusan ribu, malah dijangka 1 juta orang akan menganggur.
Tegasnya ketika ini, biarpun wujud cubaan untuk merebut jawatan, tiada dasar yang baru yang lebih prihatin kepada rakyat yang dikemukakan ahli politik ini. Jelasnya apa yang berlaku ketika ini hanyalah percaturan elit pihak yang berkuasa tanpa kemuka sebarang perincian berkenaan tata kelola yang baik.
Dan sekian Niaga Awal ini, ikuti bagaimana segelintir masyarakat mendepani cabaran kehidupan dalam dari lockdown di halaman Micro Interaktif di astroawani.com sekarang, dan segala maklumat lain dalam astroawani.com juga aplikasi Astro Awani. Terima kasih kerana menonton saluran berita paling dipercayai di Malaysia. Saya Rizal Zulkapli, salam hormat.